couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films The Suicide Squad, 9 Days, Vivo, The Boy Behind the Door, and Mr. Corman. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the trailer park, and the home cinema roundup featuring Masters of the Universe Revelation. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@themovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
The piece of news that I want to focus on this week is the fact that there is this coronavirus Delta surge. And I'm not talking about it in terms of everything else going around in America, but I'm talking about how it's going to affect movies. Because I've been hearing nothing more from hosts I talk to every week to fans of film that they wanted to get back into the theaters. And now this Delta surge is actually going to threaten the future of movies in theaters again. And here's the bellwether for that. It's the silliest bellwether you're going to hear. The studio has pulled Clifford the Big Red Dog out of distribution this September. This is the first one. This is the first high-profile movie that's getting yanked from the schedule. And the same thing happened last March, if you remember, when the coronavirus first hit. And the fact that there's this massive surge, and all you have to do is just look at a map of infections across the U.S., and it's going up a fast hill that might end up being as steep as the hill we had last fall. And this is resulting from people who aren't wearing masks and aren't getting vaccinated. That's where it's spreading. There's no question about that. That's how it's spreading, because the Delta variant is, what, like a couple hundred times or 1,000 times as transmissible just the way it had mutated? So this is going to threaten theaters for good, because we were just coming back in theaters, and now you're adding that level of resistance of people not wanting to go back to theaters. Mark my words, I will not be surprised if that James Bond movie either gets moved again, or if it ends up finally throwing up its hands and saying, screw it, we'll go to digital. Because now people are going to be heading back here. And I think Disney's going to keep doing their stuff, bringing stuff to the Disney Premier Plus. I still think that HBO Max is going to, they already talked about it. I talked about last week how they're going to be releasing 10 movies this way. If only somebody had predicted that this would happen. Oh, wait, I did back on May 14th, just a couple months ago. Listen to what I said on this very show. Let me tell you what it does not mean for theaters. It does not mean that no one has to wear a mask, or it does not mean that no one should wear a mask. If you're not vaccinated, you should still follow these guidelines until you are fully vaccinated. The whole purpose of these guidelines are to protect you and other people who are not vaccinated. The other thing, this does not mean that it's okay to lie about being vaccinated. And this is, I think, where the rubber's going to meet the road for a lot of people. There's a lot of people who just don't want to get vaccinated, but then they also don't want to be restricted. And so they're going to lie about it. And there's no way of looking at somebody to tell whether or not they're vaccinated. So it's the honor system, which isn't going to work, because that never works for people. Now, my personal guess is that there's going to be a surge this summer, and it's going to be concentrated in populations and gatherings where people are not vaccinated and aren't wearing masks. Because I know that there's going to be a lot of people out there going to be like, well, I'm not going to get a vaccine, but I'm not going to mask either. And you're the ones, you're just doing it to yourself at this point. You're putting yourself at risk. If you hear what I said, I was reiterating that when the CDC changed its masking suggestions, it said people who have been fully vaccinated can ditch the mask, but not people who haven't. But the problem is, we all went to the honor system, and then nobody wore a mask. And so all the people who are unvaccinated and weren't wearing a mask, and then suddenly you add into a highly contagious strain of this, it's going to spread. That is just basic science. You don't even have to be an expert in epidemiology to understand that. That is how viruses spread. And so now we're in this predicament. I guarantee you they're going to start delaying and canceling stuff in the next couple months, especially if the Suicide Squad doesn't perform well. And certainly if by Labor Day, if Shang-Chi and the Ten Rings doesn't do well enough for Marvel, everyone's going to suddenly freak out. And there goes your winter slate, people. And there goes your chance to go see the movies in the theaters. The bottom line, the honor system doesn't work. So look, I don't care if you don't like wearing a mask. Just follow the freaking rules, people. But this fight about I don't want to do anything is absurd, and it's ruining movie theaters. And those will be a thing of the past, as will concerts and other large venues, like any sort of sporting event that's going to struggle this fall as well. So this was predicted. I said this was going to happen. I said this was going to be a surge right at the end of the summer, and this is happening. And I guarantee you, if the box office numbers start to crumble, which they probably will because it's August, and the box office numbers start to go down just anyways because school comes back, and if the cases keep rising and the box office numbers keep dropping, you will start seeing shutting down and changing big releases, and everything's going to be going to streaming again. And now we've had an entire year of people being primed, no pun intended, to watch stuff on streaming. You're going to lose that much more viewers in theaters. So congratulations, all you people who wanted it to go back to normal too quickly. You're ruining it for everyone. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. Let's talk about a movie that still, at this point, still scheduled for September. And that is Venom, Let There Be Carnage, which should come in theaters in about a month and a half on September 24th.
I am a predator. I need to be free.
You have got to get control of your aggression, or you will get hauled off into Area 51.
You live in my body.
You live by my rules.
Eddie Brock, I want to give you my story. People love serial killers. I have tasted blood before, and that is not it. All I ever wanted in this world is carnage.
Honestly, I think this looks better than the first Venom. I was sort of iffy on the first Venom because that first Venom was a little goofy at times for me. It worked for what it was. I was never a reader of the Venom and Carnage series and the Spider-Man books. But I always was intrigued by the look of the character, and I think this is neat. I like the fact that they're interacting, and I think this feels like it's a little bit more of a quality piece than Venom. Because Venom, well, like you say, it was a little bit rubbish, but it was still fun to watch. So I'm looking forward to this one. Hopefully it stays in the theatrical track. The next one I want to talk about is House of Gucci, which is going to be a huge awards push. So it's definitely coming out in some way this fall. And that is currently scheduled in theaters for November 24th.
It was a name that sounded so sweet, so seductive. Synonymous with words, style, power. But that name was a curse too.
I've been a Gucci all my life.
Your name is in the history books.
Paolo, you are Gucci. You need to dress the part.
Look, this looks like typical award bait. I mean, it looks like a beautiful looking movie, which if you're going to make a movie about Gucci, it should look good. It should have a good style and a good presentation, and it should have all the flash and flavor and flamboyancy of the Gucci name. I'm not as impressed with Jared Leto as a lot of people are in this trailer because, you can put makeup on anybody and they're going to be a transformed performance. And Jared Leto's a little bit big for his britches anyway, so let's quit talking about him. I think Lady Gaga looks really good in this one. I think this could be another Academy Award nomination for her. Adam Driver seems like he's fine, but he kind of does that same performance for a lot of movies. I don't know if it's going to be good because Ridley Scott, and as great of a director as he is, if he just finds a nice little sandbox, he'll just play in the sandbox and forget to tell his story. Or he'll get bogged down in doldrums of the story, which we saw in stuff like Body of Lies or All the Money in the World, that one about the kidnapping, the one that did that Kevin Spacey was booted off of and they brought Christopher Plummer in for it. This one, we'll see. It's got a lot to live up to. Anyways, that's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about 9 Days and Vivo. Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's start off with the movie reviews with 9 Days. A man lives in a house in the desert where he interviews unborn souls for a chance to be sent to Earth as a child.
You are being considered for the amazing opportunity of life. If you are selected, you will have the chance to be born in a fruitful environment where you can grow, develop, and accomplish.
Am I dead?
I wouldn't say you're alive or dead.
How long is this process?
If you make it until the end, 9 days.
This actually came out in limited release last week. So sort of that New York and LA run, and it's gone wide this week. So if you have a theater that's showing this, you can go check it out pretty much anywhere in America at this point. This stars Winston Duke, who, if you don't know who he was the lead, the father in Us, if you remember that Jordan Peele movie a couple years ago. He also had a part in Black Panther, but he's a big dude, but he plays a very gentle, softer character in this one. And this is out of the box. This is not a typical, even though it looks very pragmatically down to earth with just a bunch of people living in this house. It's ethereal. It takes place in a realm other than the one we occupy. Because Winston Duke plays this guy who chooses who gets to go to Earth and become a baby and grow up. And there are a handful of applicants, and he can only choose one. And each one, he observes them and interviews them and he talks to them, and he chooses the one that's going to have the best life. And he's conflicted because there's one in particular that really catches his attention but isn't hitting the marks the way he expects her to. And then there are other ones that have different leaning in the direction of their personalities. But it all looks like it's just a bunch of people living in this house, and they watch people's lives through their own perception on these video screens, these old TV screens with old VHS players. So it has this archaic technology to it, which makes it seem even weirdly more grounded, even though it's about unborn souls. Benedict Wong also plays a character, and he is somewhat mysterious about what his origins are, because you never know where any of these people come from. They just wander out of the darkness and they show up there and are basically applying for this job. And they're only a couple days old or a couple hours old, but they can speak, and they're basically old souls that are then put into a baby's body and moved on. So it's a fascinating look at stuff, and it gives you an opportunity to sort of contemplate the meaning of life, as corny as that does sound. I mean, but that's kind of what the point is. It's this movie is supposed to get you to think about something greater than just mere existence. You know, that existential background dread that we all have of how horrible life can be sometimes. But it also tries to teach you in this movie, it tries to focus on where the beauty is and where and it can be something as simple as riding a bike or wading in the ocean. And that's kind of the beauty that's filtered through this movie. And these concepts of the unborn, I mean, this has been done before. We've seen these kind of things. Heck, we saw this in Soul. If you remember the movie Soul, the Pixar movie, that was the Tina Fey's character. She played an unborn life that hasn't achieved the ability to go to Earth yet. And that's telling, because these are concepts that have been around for hundreds of years, not just the very typical, you know, Sunday school guy in a big white robe doing things. It's a much more abstract look at a very abstract concept. And I think that's gives it a neat contemplative feel to it. Now, it's a slow burn and it takes its time, and that's okay, because that's sort of the type of story it is. But I will say it's fascinating to watch, and I recommend it. But like I said, it is a slow burn. It's not Soul, but it is something that'll give you something to contemplate, give you something to think about. So I'm going to have to say that 9 Days kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with Vivo. Lin-Manuel Miranda stars as a kinkachu whose owner passes away, and he has to take the man's message of love from Cuba to Miami with the help of the granddaughter.
Nothing would mean more to me than for us to sing together again.
So you guys were like a duo. She was also the love of my life, but I never told her how I felt. I put it into a song.
I must deliver this song to Marta.
She needs to know that I love her.
Marta, here I come.
Marta needs to hear this song, and I'm gonna get you there. Get in my bag. The mission for love is on.
This is one of those movies that hopefully, I was hoping we'd see fewer of them as we go forward, but and there's gonna be probably more of these in the future. But this is one of those movies that got delayed by the pandemic, and it was supposed to come out, I believe, last year. It was aimed for theaters. And this did have a very, very limited theatrical run, probably New York, L.A., or maybe just L.A. I know Netflix, I think, owns this whole strip of billboards in Los Angeles, and I think they're trying to acquire theaters as well. So it may have just played there to get award consideration as best musical, probably for best animated feature. And it was finally brought to Netflix and it was sold, and then they dropped it. And it was actually a pretty quick run. I mean, they announced this was releasing on the 6th. It was like a month ago was when they publicly did that. And that's one of those interesting things about Netflix is they've narrowed the window in publicity as well. They're like, they promote something instead of promoting something for 2 years, they promote it over those series of months or weeks even. And so Vivo is an interesting little movie. It's cute and it's clever. It does have Lin-Manuel Miranda singing and rapping and everything. So I personally, I'm like, okay, it was neat when he did some songs for Moana. And then I saw Hamilton last year and then I saw In the Heights this year. So I'm kind of like, okay, I get it. I see where his shtick is. I'm not a huge fan, but I can appreciate it. But you know, I'd like to see him do something different, but he's still doing what he's kind of known for. And he does a good job in the role. I mean, he's fun, but the real breakout is the granddaughter, the girl who does the voice of the granddaughter. And just the animation of the granddaughter is amazing. It's very colorful and bright. And the character of the granddaughter, she's kind of stocky and she has these big, almost Elton John kind of glasses and this crazy hair that's different colors. And she's just full of energy. And I love that kid. I mean, I absolutely love the kid. And the Kinkachu, Kinkachu's okay. That kid is hilarious in it. And that's really where the movie takes off, is when the two of them hook up and they're trying to make their way from, I think they're in Key West or something like that. They're somewhere in the Keys and they have to go to Miami, which isn't that far for a normal person like me. But I guess for a like 8-year-old and a Kinkachu, that's a little bit hard to get through. And they have adventures going through like the Everglades and they're just on the road and, you know, in a ship or whatever. And the goal is to deliver this message of love to this woman who's now, it's played by Gloria Estefan, but she's now a big star in Miami. But of course, the owner whose message of love it is, he's passed away. And so there's a certain degree of pathos and sadness to this that plays out. But it's a fun, vibrant, musically exciting movie. It's cool. It's something you can watch with the family. Don't go watching Suicide Squad with your 6-year-old. I'll talk about that in the next segment. But yeah, this is a cute little movie. I enjoyed it. I have to say, even though I'm not a massive fan of Lin-Manuel Miranda, I mean, it worked for that role. He certainly fits that character. So this is definitely worth checking out on Netflix this weekend. I'm going to say that Vivo kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about the Suicide Squad and the boy behind the door.
Oh, oh, I love you so much. I can't let you go.
Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the rest of the movie reviews and talk about The Suicide Squad. James Gunn directs this over-the-top reboot sequel about a team of bad guys who go into impossible situations to protect the country.
Each member is chosen for his or her own completely unique set of abilities. Your mission is to destroy every trace of something known only as Project Starfish.
This is suicide.
Well, that's kind of our thing.
I'm a superhero!
Ratatouille, what do you got?
Bird.
Now it. Stay off the comm.
The history behind this movie is really, actually, in a lot of ways, more interesting than the first movie. The first movie was directed by David Ayers, and it made like $300 and some million in the United States. It did surprisingly well for a DC movie, because right at that time they were struggling. You know, Man of Steel and, you know, Batman versus Superman had limited success, but somehow Suicide Squad clicked. I hated it. I did not like the first Suicide Squad. Part of the reason is I'm not a big fan of David Ayers as a director. I think his stuff is needlessly grim and nihilistic at times. And I just prefer not to watch it, because I'm like, I usually hate his characters and I hate the situations they're in. And it just makes me feel like I need to take a shower. And not because I'm normally just a filth pig myself. It's just that the movie is bad. So they were going to do a sequel, and then you had the crumbling apart of the Justice League, and DC is still trying to figure out what it's doing, and ended up picking James Gunn after he dropped out of doing Guardians of the Galaxy 3, and they chose James Gunn to do this movie, which is a great choice, because if you know anything about James Gunn, his roots are in trauma. If you don't know what trauma is, they did, the most famous film they did was The Toxic Avenger. And they do schlocky, cheesy, I mean, not even B, but like C and D level movies. And I mean, some of their stuff is really awful, especially the stuff they acquire. But they do corny, cheesy exploitation movies for the modern age. And they've been doing them since the 80s. Really, it's funny because their movies themselves aren't great. They're more fun to watch the trailers. Nothing but a lineup of trauma trailers are hilarious. And when I was a kid and I'd go to these 24-hour movie marathons, they always threw in a whole bunch of trauma releases. I mean, they have insane movies like Class of Nukem High and Sergeant Kabuki Man NYPD and Nymphoid Barbarian and Dinosaur Hell. I mean, these are the kind of movies that trauma makes. And those are, by the way, look up all three of those trailers. They're awesome. The movies aren't, but the trailers are awesome. And James Gunn cut his teeth as a trauma director, and now he's a big name. And so he's doing the Suicide Squad, which allows him to dip into his R-rated, gory wheelhouse. But here's the thing. I'm going to just warn you. If you got like a 6-year-old at home who loves Guardians of the Galaxy and he wants to see the movie that was done by the guy with the talking raccoon, do not take him to see Suicide Squad. This is a violent movie that has a lot of fun with said violence and gore. It's not like overtly sexual. It was the violence and the explosions and the carnage that happens. I mean, there's literally a scene where King Shark, who's literally just a big giant shark that walks around on land, just rips a guy in half. I mean, that's the kind of stuff. He's chewing on the guy's head in the next scene. So, I mean, there's a lot of gore and craziness and over the top. Now, they brought back some of the characters that people liked from the first movie. People like Harley Quinn, played by Margot Robbie. She, of course, returns, and she's great in this, but it's less her movie. I mean, she's kind of just a sidekick in this, which is a shame. But, I mean, she got her whole Birds of Prey movie last year. So I don't mind having, and I actually like the idea of bringing in major players and making them kind of a side character. And she's great in the movie. And they have Idris Elba, who I would say if anyone's movie, it's Idris Elba's movie. He's sort of their leader. And then you've got Joel Kinnaman comes back as Flag. And you got John Cena in there playing, it's kind of somebody to butt heads with Idris Elba. And the Shark, King Shark, is played by, well, is voiced by Sylvester Stallone. He's computer generated. They got a stand in for him. So they have a whole bunch of different, really insane characters. Nothing that anyone would really recognize aside from Harley Quinn, unless you really deep dive into some of the Batman villains and that sort of thing in the DC comics. But I have to say, the reason they're doing anything in this movie is just a giant MacGuffin, but it doesn't matter. It's the fact for them to be crazy and violent, and they're on this mission to stop this insane weapon that's being held in this island country off the coast of South America. And some of the characters I would have liked to seen a little bit more oomph to, like Peter Capaldi plays this Thinker, and I've never gotten to the Thinker in reading DC. I probably may have swerved into him here and there because I would read Batman comics and Superman comics, but I don't remember him as being a major character, and I wanted him to have a little more power than just being able to think, but I guess that's his role. And so there's elements to this that are a little bit grounded, that's when it kind of loses steam. But boy, when it is violent and extreme, that's when it's fun. And the first 20 minutes of this movie are a hoot. The last 30 to 40 minutes of this movie are also a hoot. They're over the top and crazy. And there's a lot of stuff in the middle that's there too. There's a lot of laugh out loud stuff. And James Gunn brings that style that he had in the Guardians of the Galaxy movie of being irreverent and silly and having a good time. But in this one, you add in all that R-rated craziness. And so I had a blast watching this movie. I'm going to probably watch it a couple times in the next week or so on HBO Max, because that's kind of what I do with the movies I like. So yeah, Suicide Squad totally rocks. It's worth checking out, but leave the kids at home.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about The Boy Behind the Door. Two preteen boys are kidnapped and one of them escapes, but refuses to leave until the other is able to be saved as well.
Can't wait till we're older.
We can leave this place.
Where do you want to go?
Somewhere where the sun's always shining.
Kevin?
Kevin, can you hear me? It's me, Bobby.
I'm scared, Bobby.
Me too, okay? But I'm not gonna leave you.
This started airing last week on Shudder, the service. I've talked about this several times. About it's mainly horror and thriller and genre fiction. This is directed by the same guys who did The Djinn. And I talked about that earlier this year. The Djinn was a story of this kid who makes a wish and then basically calls up this evil genie and has to, you know, survive the night or the genie is going to kill him. And the same kid's in it. They have the same actor who plays the kid in The Djinn. He plays one of the boys who's kidnapped. And this one is not as intimate as The Djinn is. I mean, The Djinn takes place in one apartment and a couple scenes outside, but really it's inside. This one has a little bit bigger of a scope because it mostly takes place in this big house where they're being held captive. And it's a powerful, like, kidnapping story because they're kids. They don't know how to handle certain things. The reason it works well when you put kids in a situation like this is if you put adults and the adults do something, they're scared or they're stupid in there, you're like, well, you're an adult, you should know better. But a, you know, 10-year-old kid who's kidnapped, that's, you know, anyone could freeze in that moment, and you can understand that. So they're trying to escape the traps, basically being held there, but also to stop the people that are holding them while trying to get help. But they're kids, so they don't know how to drive. You know, they're little kids, are not terribly strong, I mean, for their size. So it really puts you in a precarious situation and you really feel for these children. And the directors, in the middle, they do some homages to The Shining. A lot of times a little heavy-handed. They go a little bit too far with The Shining homage, but it weaves it in there pretty decently. And it's a intense stalking cat and mouse game, and very similar to The Djinn, where The Djinn takes, you know, about 20 minutes to set itself up, and then it's like an hour of The Djinn going after this kid. And in this one takes, you know, 20, 25 minutes to set up what happens to these kids, and then the rest of the movie is them trying to survive and help each other and see if they can get out of there alive. And it certainly has a realistic feel to it, so I imagine it's going to be uncomfortable for some people to watch, but it's an excellent movie. It's worth checking out. It's a great suspense flick. Check it out. It's on Shudder right now. The Boy Behind the Door rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Mr. Corman and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Masters of the Universe Revelation. To Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews and talk about Mr. Corman, which actually isn't a movie, it's a TV series. It's on Apple TV Plus. Joseph Gordon-Levitt stars as a 30-something single fifth grade teacher who has an early midlife crisis. La, la, la,
la, la. I'm having anxiety or panic or something, both.
What's the difference?
I'm gonna need a sub for today. La, la,
la, la, la. What's bothering you?
Everything. It just feels like I blew the whole thing, like I suck as a person.
You're not entitled to a perfect partner or a perfect life.
I didn't leave you because you became a teacher.
I left because I thought I was doing what I love with the man I love.
This is a series, I think it's 10 episodes long, but I think they're only dropping one or a couple episodes this week. I feel like this is Festivus for me, because I got some grievances to air, and I got some problems with you, Joseph Gordon-Levitt. He writes and directs a bunch of the episodes, and it's his whole thing. And it's about this guy. He had wanted to become a musician, and he had ended up settling for a job as a teacher. And he wakes up one day, and he thinks, you know, am I a terrible person? Am I not going anywhere? What's up with my life? You know, he's having panic attacks. And the life of just hanging out with his roommate in his crappy LA apartment and going out to bars to meet girls and hopefully have sex might not be as fulfilling as one might consider. Part of it is there's a disingenuous nature to this show. Because here's Joseph Gordon-Levitt, who has literally been a TV and movie star since before he could get a driver's license. You know, he was doing movies early, and then he kind of became a big push on Third Rock from the Sun. And before you know it, he's doing movies like Brick, you know, in Inception, and he's 500 Days of Summer, and he's been in the Batman movies. So this is a guy who ostensibly has made it in the career that would be the dream career for this guy. And it's disingenuous for him to try to get in the mind of the average man who doesn't know what he wants to do and hates his life. Well, you don't know what you're talking about, you idiot. Come live in garbage town with the rest of us, where we gotta pay bills with normal paychecks and not the kind of paycheck you get working on a couple Christopher Nolan movies. Maybe I'm not doing the fulfillment of my career. Shut up. It's so pretentious, this show, to try to lecture me on what it's like to be just an average guy. So that's part of my problem with Mr. Corman. The other problem I have is he's a jerk. He's a crappy person. You know, there's a point where maybe I'm not a nice person. Yes. Do you think that's it? You're such a weak individual. And then you wonder, well, you know, oh, why do I have all these problems? Well, what is the consistent thing with all of your problems? It's you. Maybe the problem is you, not your job, not your roommate, not your ex-girlfriend. Maybe the problem is you. And that's what I don't like about it. It's this character. It's such a crappy character. And I mean, look, I'm a big fan of movies and TV shows where they have terrible characters if you can have fun with them. Great example. The TV series, It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, is a hoot because they're such bad people. You know, Married with Children was the same way. It was just fun to watch this family. That's awful. They have an entire double series on in the UK and in America called Shameless that is nothing but sleazy people. I am all for movies and TV shows about sleazy people if you can find them funny. But this guy, I just want to punch him in the face every episode I see. It's excruciating to watch because you're like, maybe he'll learn something. No, he's not. And then he does these like sort of like out of the box surreal moments. Like, do you remember that scene in 500 Days of Summer where after they have sex the first time, he comes walking to work and he's dancing and he's singing. They have this big song and dance number, which is kind of clever, that movie. He does that in this one. It's like, great, you're ripping off a movie you're in. And then he basically ripping stuff off Scott Pilgrim versus the World. There's not an original thought in this series. And there's a whole bunch of series out there that are nothing but somebody in their 30s or 40s and can't get their life in order. There's a lot of those. Some of them are terrible like this, and some of them, like Fleabag, is actually quite good. So go watch Fleabag instead of Mr. Corman, because Mr. Corman sucks.
It sucks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Today I'm going to focus on something that dropped a couple weeks ago, and it's caused a bit of a stir online. You may not have heard about this because you're hearing it on the radio. But the Masters of the Universe Revelation series was spearheaded by Kevin Smith. And a lot of people were excited for it, and then they dropped the first half of the series, and I think there's 5 episodes in it. And they have a cliffhanger, and then, of course, they do the next 5 episodes. And I want to talk about that series. It was a couple weeks ago. It's been on Netflix, so I think we're about 2 weeks behind on it. But it's worth talking about because it's in the zeitgeist. Isn't that a good $20 word? Anyways, after He-Man is vanquished by Skeletor, the warriors of Eternia must go on a quest to return the magic to the realm.
Magic gave birth to Eternia, the first planet in all of creation. But now the magic is gone. And without magic, Eternia will rot and die. And as goes Eternia, so goes the entire universe.
I built a life of truth. Away from magic. Now you want me to save magic?
Now, if you're not following along with this, what's happened is a lot of people have complained. And I gotta say, the people who are complaining, they're not wrong. The reason they're complaining is because they vanquish He-Man in the first episode. The stuff we grew up with was He-Man and the Masters of the Universe. If you go back and watch the old Masters of the Universe show, it was He-Man and then a whole bunch and then a team around him. And this one, they get rid of He-Man literally in the first scene. You got five episodes where you pretty much he's not in there at all. He's completely sidelined and at times completely gone. I mean, you literally have entire episodes where he doesn't even enter into the discussion. And it ends up falling to other people in Eternia. And like, they've got this the one warrior who's the daughter of the man at arms who was his warrior in He-Man's warrior. And he's the one who had Battle Cat, which was Cringer before he turns into the powerful cat. And she's voiced by Sarah Michelle Gellar, which part of it is she's like this Xena looking woman with these just big ripped muscles. And she's as tall as He-Man, and she's very imposing. And then she has a voice like this because she's Sarah Michelle Gellar. Well, nothing against Sarah Michelle Gellar, but there's another character in there who's voiced by Lena Headey, and she has a good voice for a cartoon like this. It's like, you don't get Woody Allen to do the voice of Superman in the Superman cartoons because he doesn't sound like Superman. And Sarah Michelle Gellar does not sound like a warrior. She sounds like Buffy, who might be, a Valley Girl who kills vampires. So those are some problems with it. But ultimately, the problem is they do sideline all the main characters that you grew up with. And look, this is not me being butthurt because I don't like strong women. Because some people have been very critical of this. To the point that Kevin Smith's like, grow up, you don't like strong women. You should, you're just a bunch of sexists. Well, here's the thing. If you go and you look at the advertising for this and you look at the trailers and the marketing, He-Man is all over the marketing. They know they were marketing it to people. And you look at the marketing, you're like, oh, He-Man should be in this. It's not called He-Man and Masters of the Universe. They're just calling it Masters of the Universe. But the trailer certainly leads you to believe that he's going to be in at least more than half of an episode total. Then they do a bait and switch. And the reality is the characters they're left with are side characters. They're not great characters. And maybe they're what you grew up with if you read the books and the comics and played the games. But for the casual viewer who watched the TV series like me, I'm like, yeah, they're kind of boring characters. They're basically like Rose Tycho in the Star Wars movie. A lot of times people are like, oh, well, if you don't like Rose Tycho, you're a sexist. Well, maybe it's because she's not well-written, she's weak and whiny and counterproductive at times. Rose Tycho is a lousy character in the Star Wars movies. She doesn't fit into the mythology of the movies. For that matter, neither does Benicio del Toro's character in The Last Jedi. There's a lot of problems with The Last Jedi. But Rose Tycho got dumped on from Star Wars not because she was a girl, but because it's a crappy character. If you're going to do a crappy character, at least do a crappy character like Jar Jar Binks, where you're like, well, at least we're using him as a CGI test. Speaking of Star Wars, this Masters of the Universe series, it would be like having a Star Wars movie, and then the entire movie was C-3PO and Chewbacca talking, which I'm sure Kevin Smith would love to write, but it would not be a good Star Wars movie. They're all side characters. You need the hero, whether it's Luke Skywalker or Rey, you got to have a hero, and you don't have any really in this series. So I'm going to have to say, I mean, there's another five episodes or whatever to come in part two, but right now I'm a little disappointed with it. So I'm going to have to say the Masters of the Universe stuff kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
Also available on DVD and Blu-ray this week include Luca, Those Who Wish Me Dead, and Here Today in terms of new movies. And then from the vault, we've got Django Special Edition, and that's it. I gotta go. Next week I'll be talking about Free Guy and What If. And until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.